Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
This is Dmitry Samarov from Chicago, Illinois. And I love listening to Vish Khanna's Creative Control because whether he's talking to a favorite musician or actor of mine or someone I've never heard of, it's as if he's introducing me to a new friend. And the way things are going, couldn't you use a new friend? Listen now.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Douglas McCombs and Charles Rumbach are each gifted musicians who call Chicago, Illinois, home. A renowned bassist and electric guitarist, McCombs is a core or performing member in bands like Tortoise, 11th Dream Day, Brokeback, The Sea and Cake, and he has recently begun performing on his own. Primarily a drummer, Rumbach is also a respected solo artist who has collaborated with the likes of Bill McKay, Riley Walker, Azita, and Jim Baker, among many others. Along with the aforementioned guitarist Bill McKay, McCombs and Rumbach have formed the explosive and exploratory three-piece band Black Duck, whose self-titled debut album was released by Thrill Jockey Records on June 23rd, 2023. As such, Douglas and Charles joined me for a fun conversation about things like jazz and punk and freedom, the kinship between Slint and Tortoise, the Chicago music community and its openness, why some of the most influential drummers in the world are hip-hop producers like Jay Dilla, improvisation and composition in music, working with the producer John Hughes III, neighborhood backyards during a pandemic, a gig with Cheap Trick, upcoming Black Duck shows, a Tortoise album update, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol. That is the primary source of revenue for all the work that goes into this show. So thank you if you already are donating to this show or are contemplating it. Like, more than usual, you're listening to me and you're really seriously thinking about donating. to the show and to me at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thanks again for doing that. Plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in the wonderful town of Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in the also wonderful town, or city, of Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 786 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Douglas McCombs and Charles Rumbach of Black Duck, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Douglas, how's it going?
Hi, Vish, how are you?
Oh, I'm very well. It's nice to speak with you again. It feels like it hasn't been that long. How do you feel about what I just said?
I feel like it was not that long ago, but it was probably in, you know, it might have been in like September or October or something, right?
Yes, and you alluded to this project that we're going to talk about, and I didn't know that much about it at the time, and I'm excited that it's here. It's great, and I can't wait to start talking about it. But first of all, as you may know, I like to ask where people are in the world. Where in the world are you today, Doug?
I'm in Chicago, in my house, sitting in the exact spot that I was last time we spoke. And I have been here. I have been sitting here for 6 long months.
Just waiting for me to call back?
Yes.
You're just like, maybe that was fun. Maybe he'll call back. I'll just sit here. No, that's good. You have hit the road and things since we last spoke, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was touring most of the spring. I did some stuff with Chris Forsyth and Meg Baird and Tortoise.
Yeah. And how was all that?
It was all really good.
Nice. Hey, did you know that Meg Baird was on the show?
I did notice that, yes.
Yeah, subsequent to you mentioning Meg, who I'd known of, I thought, you know what? If it's good enough for Douglas McCombs, it should be good enough for me and my show. Let's see if we can work that out. And Meg and I think, had a nice chat. So thanks for thanks for mentioning that, I suppose. And thanks for collaborating with Meg. She seems lovely.
She's the best.
Yeah, nice. Well, it's good to have you back on the show again. We're joined by someone who's never been on the show and someone I've not met before. Charlie, are you there?
Yes, it's great to meet you.
Great to meet you, too. Where in the world are you?
I'm in Chicago as well. I'm on the south side, down at South Shore.
Nice. For people listening around the world, why that distinction? Where are you distinguishing between where you are and where Douglas might be?
Well, yeah, I guess so. I guess we are south side and north side, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How long have you lived there?
I've been here for a few years now, 3 or 4 years, 3 years.
I see. Nice. Yeah. And are you from Chicago?
I'm from Kansas originally, but I've been living in Chicago since 2001. So I feel like I'm a Chicagoan.
Oh, absolutely. 2001, you've put your time in. That's true.
Yeah.
The south side of Chicago is a fabled place, you know, in the context of music and culture. Is it as magical as we have been led to believe? Or I don't know. You know what I'm getting at there?
Yeah, perception? It is. Yeah. And there's still like a lot of that there. I think the venues and things, you know, like the rest of the city, the north side's no different in the sense that the venues change and the styles that were once dominant, you know, blues and things like that, that people associate with the south side, is still around big time.
Yeah.
But there's other stuff too now, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. And you're, again, Charlie, I don't know you as well. Your entry point into sort of, you mentioned the blues. If you were like to associate yourself with a particular genre expression, if you will, I know that can be reductive, but what's your background exactly? What kind of musical forms did you first explore?
Yeah, I think a lot of the stuff that I got into at a young age was jazz. And studied jazz and kind of learned how to play and approach music through that direction. Yeah. I don't really think of it like genres necessarily now when I, you know, when we play, make music, we just play whatever feels right. But, yeah, I guess people would associate me probably with the jazz world.
Yeah. When I think of jazz, it's like a way of being, not like a way of playing. Does that make any sense to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I almost think of it sometimes like this, like, certain musical, it's almost like a musical morality. Like it has to be coming from the right place, or you know what I mean? Like certain things like that, that it is spiritual in that way.
Yeah, that's how I think of it. I think of this, I think of punk the same way, if that makes sense. I know people have
their
perceptions, but to me, it's a lot of freedom. It's a lot of,
I don't relate to the punk world so much, but I do like punk, you know, the punk rock ethics is something that I always think about. It's cool.
I think the last time Douglas was on, we got into this a little bit, his exploration of freedom as a young person. And Douglas, do you remember what we were talking about? Just sort of discovering kind of underground music and realizing it could be kind of anything. It didn't have to be any one thing. Does that resonate with you as well?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was like my entry, in quotes, punk rock was my entry into like discovering adventurous music. And to me, it was very much like a type of expression of freedom, I guess, more than like a genre or a style of playing. So I discovered a lot of things around that time in the late 70s that a lot of people, I don't know, you know, maybe wouldn't consider punk, but it was all part of the same movement. It was all part of a similar movement of things changing at the time.
Yeah. And as I recall, and I don't mean to rehash our recent conversation completely, but as I recall, your entry point into Chicago also opened you up to the notion that music and freedom were intertwined and it could be kind of anything. Is that about right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I wanted to move to Chicago out of high school so that I could be around that stuff. And I discovered lots of stuff moving here. Chicago was opened my eyes to many, many things.
Yeah. So a similar way there, Charles, like you moved to Chicago from Kansas. Chicago, you know, I mentioned the South Side having a bit of a legendary status there. Chicago as a whole has, I would say, the same kind of magical history and quality to it. What exactly drew you to Chicago? Was it the music? Was it something else?
Oh, it was definitely the music. And I live on the South Side now, but it wasn't even necessarily the South Side music that drew me here. I mean, just the whole city, and specifically like a lot of the scene that, you know, like Doug was involved in. I mean, I remember, honestly, I got, even before I met Doug, when I was like 18, I saw Tortoise play in Lawrence, Kansas. Hmm. Let's see, was I 18? No, I was like 20 because my brother was 18. It was his 18th birthday, and I took him to see Tortoise, and I got sick. The guys saw me get sick, and they wouldn't let me in. They thought I was drunk, and I wasn't drunk. I just got sick.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Well, first of all,
history with Jordan.
That's a weird history. First of all, happy birthday to your brother. I know it's belated, but I just want to send that vibe out now. Secondly, what was it, food poisoning? Why were you all of a sudden getting sick?
I don't know. Oh. I don't know. But my point, I guess, is even way back then, I was like fascinated by the Chicago scene and the Chicago, like Tortoise and bands like that, but also like the jazz stuff that was happening here. There was a lot of music that made me want to come up this way.
Well, for me, bands like Tortoise really exemplify that I don't want to say multidisciplinary, like we're having a colloquium discussion right now, but Tortoise for me really exemplified this notion of like, wait a minute, this is jazz and this is punk or post-punk and all those things. Was Tortoise kind of a bit of a lodestar for you, Charles, in terms of like, wait a minute, I can do anything and it can be good?
I guess so. I mean, coming from the place that I was coming from, like, I guess I already kind of shared that spirit in that way.
Yeah.
But like, definitely it was like, I hadn't seen that way of combining things. And it definitely like, kind of like, okay. Yeah, I guess it did. I guess it was kind of anything is possible kind of experience.
My interaction with that band, if I may, let's just pretend Douglas McCombs isn't on the call. We'll fawn about Tortoise just a little bit. But my experience with that
band.
Can
you hear me?
Oh no. Uh-oh. This is going to be more awkward now. I'm sorry. Doug, we love your band is what I was going to get at there. I'm sorry. I hope that's okay.
It's fine. I love it too.
My point was my first exposure to the music of Tortoise was on record. before I saw them live. That's not that unusual, but it was at a time when I was playing kind of post-hardcore music, and it just, as a drummer, it altered me. It made me bring things to the practice space where my bandmates were like, what's going on over there? Exactly. What's happening? But also, this is awesome. Let's try to work on stuff like this a little bit. You know, I'm in my early 20s, so you're in the mode of emulation, hopefully not just, you know, completely copying other people's ideas, but come on, sometimes you do a little bit. And so I just want to say, for the record, that was my experience with that band. Hearing it, being like, oh, shit, you can do a whole bunch of different things that I hadn't really thought of doing before. That's all I was kind of getting at, Charles. Does that make sense? I don't mean to make things awkward with you being like, yeah, Tortoise were fine.
Yeah, yeah.
They were a good band. I don't know. What do you want me to say, buddy?
No. But it was like, you know, coming from Kansas, it was funny because I was already like playing with, it's like you kind of play with whoever's around. And so it ends up being a weird hybrid anyway,
yeah.
Like, because there's not a scene of just like great jazz people and great whatever people. It's like you kind of just do this weird hybrid.
Yeah,
but yeah, seeing it like put together like that was something special.
Yeah,
for sure.
I appreciate you backing me up on that, because otherwise it might have been very awkward, me just fawning by myself. So thank you for helping.
And then also, like, I don't know, when I came to Chicago, you know, Doug's experience with it is different. But like, I came and it was a lot of overlap. I mean, it's a lot of the same people. Fred Lomberg Holm, I really loved and still love playing with, and
yeah.
Fred Anderson at the Velvet, like, it was an amazing time there.
Well, and yeah, I mean, our ensemble of Chicago, like, there's just a legacy of stuff that I know. In like, now I know where Tortoise may and other musicians in that city might have drawn their own influences from. Does that make sense, Doug? Like, all the stuff that was going on in terms of the history of
absolutely. I mean, I think the 80s was like a springboard where a lot of stuff was bubbling under, and then like it seemed to me that a lot of people were diversifying their interests and finding new things, and then suddenly, at least from my experience, everything kind of exploded in the 90s, and people were doing a lot of, and people were open to doing a lot of different things, and were doing a lot of different things. And mostly just to satisfy their own curiosity. There was no like career agenda involved with most of this stuff. There was a whole other set of music that was doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. Just to follow up on, I think maybe mostly what I was saying, but also what Charles and I were talking about. And Doug, I don't know if this puts you in a strange position. It's going to be a bit of a memory jog. But if you think back on that time you're talking about, the 90s, and as Tortoise would play around and put out records, were you starting to see that the band did have what was inspiring other people to maybe try similar things? Like, as you went from town to town, maybe an opening band, you'd be like, oh, okay, we actually, people seem to be, it seems to be resonating with players enough that they're going for it in sort of the same spirit, at least, if not, you know, sound. Did you notice that?
I mean, to me, it seemed more like there were like-minded people around doing some stuff, similar stuff. Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, we would not encounter that many bands that sounded like Tortoise, but we would definitely encounter bands that you could tell we're trying to do something slightly different, or like, you know, combining a lot of different ideas and having like good results. I think, you know, occasionally a more common thing would be to see like a band that seemed like they might have been trying to sound a little bit too much like Slint or something like that. That was more common.
I want to talk about Black Duck shortly, but since we're on the Tortoise tip, do you have some kinship with the sound? I mean, obviously there's some crossover with membership, but between Slint and Tortoise, like, do you see a connection there in terms of what you guys were both doing at the time?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I do.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, first of all, we all knew each other going back into the 80s. Or most of us knew each other. At least I knew a couple of the members of Slint, and McIntyre for sure did, and Bundy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, there was like a certain commonality there. I mean, it was definitely more like a tandem sort of thing. Like,
yeah.
Not like a, you know, one of us inspiring the other or the other, you know. Although, you know, Slint was definitely a touchstone of that time. Like, that was a band that I was interested in because they were doing something that was so unusual, mm-hmm. you know, at least for the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Another huge influence on me in terms of drumming was, and I've talked about this before, and, you know, the first time I actually heard Slint was on the kids soundtrack. I don't know if you remember that. Uh-huh. That's they had us. So this is a Charles. Are you familiar with that soundtrack? Do you know the kids movie?
I remember the movie. I don't remember the soundtrack.
So it was commandeered by Lou Barlow and Jonathan Davis. Yeah, from the Folk Implosion, and they did a soundtrack, and it had a bunch of Daniel Johnson songs on it and a bunch of their own songs on it. And in fact, one of their big singles there. But at the end of the record, I believe, they put on Good Morning Captain. And it's the first time I heard it. And the drumming, again, I immediately went and got the whole record because that's what I did at the time. But, yeah, I'm just saying, guys, that was an important time for me. This is all about me. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I don't mean to do this, but I'm just saying it was very important. So I appreciate the insights there from both of you. Charles, I want to go back to you here because from the way you told the story, you encounter Tortoise in Lawrence, Kansas. Then you vomit on them. When do you start to become friendly with Doug? And, you know, let's get to where this friendship started. Can you go back and tell me how that happened? Again, obviously, he had to clean the vomit off of himself. And then what happened?
Then I waited 10 years.
Then 10 years later, I dared show my face again to be in Azita's band.
Oh,
we
right.
Did a tour.
Oh,
we did,
okay.
We did a tour with Azita.
Nice.
Probably like when, Doug, 2012?
I think it was earlier than that.
Earlier than that?
I think it was a lot earlier than that, but I could be mistaken.
I'm not sure either. It was a long time ago.
It was at least 10 years, if not 12 or 13 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. That's my recollection.
Azita and I mm-hmm. have also become a little bit friendly. Azita's been on the show, and so I'm a big fan. That's great. That's how you collaborated in that capacity? Is that what you're saying, Charles?
I think that's the first time we ever played together, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And then subsequent to that, did you play more together, Doug, or did it take some time?
Well, I think first of all, I knew Charles before the Azita band, but playing with Azita mm-hmm. was the first time I played with him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And after that tour, I think we mentioned to each other we should play some more sometime. That was it. And then mm-hmm. that kind of dangled for a while.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. when you say a while, can you put a sort of time frame on that?
Well, I'm trying to I don't remember exactly when Charles and I began this endeavor, but the beginnings of this were Charles and I playing together a couple times, trying to, like, I had specifically wanted to do something that was kind of improvised and asked Charles if he wanted to, like, start to work on it, and we got together. I don't know when that was. Was that 2015 or something?
That sounds about right. Something like that. Yeah. And we only played a few times probably before we played with Bill.
Yeah.
Oh, did you actually, Charles, did you guys play shows as a duo?
I don't think we did any shows, did we, Doug? No.
No,
we did a show later as a duo, but no.
We played a few times in the rehearsal space, and then we were just brainstorming about, like, what direction we could take it, and Charles had mentioned trying to play with Bill.
Oh, so okay. Okay.
That's cool. What we did.
I want to get to the Bill dynamic in a moment, Charles, Doug's been on the show a couple times, and last time we did a pretty deep dive into kind of his musical origin story, if you will, you know, how he came to start playing music. I'd like to offer you the same opportunity to talk about this, because Doug obviously knows you well. When someone says, I think we should get together and play, and then maybe it's unspoken, but you begin by improvising, Doug knows something about your background that I, in this context, currently do not exactly know. Can you talk a little bit about how you got into playing as a musician, as a fan, and maybe your trajectory, and maybe even how you oscillate between composition and improvisation? I know that's a lot of stuff to talk about, but can you take us into the world of Charles and let us know how you got here?
Yeah, sure. I got interested, like, playing, you know, probably, I don't know, pretty young. I got more serious about it probably like 7th or 8th grade. I started playing the drums a lot, and then I actually started playing with these guys in my hometown that were a little bit, you know, I was probably, what, 14 at the time, and they were, you know, in their 20s, and the leader of the band was in his 40s. Mm-hmm. And we had a Sunday night gig every Sunday night at this bar from 10 to 2 for years, for like 4 years. And I feel really lucky looking back on that, because I kind of like learned how to, you know, play seriously. But whatever. So then I moved away from my hometown. We moved, I moved to Chicago in 2001 to go to school to study jazz composition at, the university here. But I was interested in playing with people. And I think when I first started to actually cross worlds with kind of Doug's community of people, it was because I happened to be going to school with a guy who was also going to school at the conservatory, named Jeremy Jacobson, the lonesome organist. And he was on Thrill Jockey.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And he asked me to...
I saw the lonesome organist open for Pavement once.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, so he was...
Quite remarkable.
So yeah. we were in college together at the same time, and he asked me to play with him, like, he did a show for the... Thrill Jockey 15-year anniversary. And so then I met some different people that I think, you know, then I started working with people like Matt Lux. I met there, and I met everybody in Califone. I met all the, you know, like a whole bunch of people that were around at that time. It's probably when I met you, Doug, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, then it's just we start collaborating and we kind of get familiar with each other's work, and mine kind of tended to cross over into the jazz world, and I was doing with this band called Colorless. It was me and the saxophonist Charles Gorzinski. We used to play at the Velvet Lounge a lot, and you know, just I don't know. There was so many things that we were all doing at the time. It was just like constantly crossing over and seeing each other play. So,
yeah. So you mentioned you started playing drums around grade 7 or 8, I think is what you said. Do you know what inspired you at that time? Were you listening to things in particular that prompted you to think, I want to try that?
When I was young, when I first started playing the drums, I was just wanted to kind of learn how to play beats that I heard, like on the songs that I was hearing at the time, like, you know, 90s R&B or hip hop beats that I thought were cool and interesting. And so then when I was playing in like the drum line and things like that at school, we would copy those kinds of beats. That was a good introduction for me to just kind of learn by ear. But,
you know,
but I mean, it, you know, once you start playing, you get interested in 1,000 different things. So
do you think as a drummer, sometimes every once in a while, if it comes up that I have played drums, people say, well, who are your influences? And, you know, I will cite the various drumming dudes and Tortoise or other bands that mean a lot to me. But every once in a while, if I think of it, I go, and yeah, like one of my biggest influences as a drummer is DJ Shadow's Introducing. Mm-hmm. And people say, what? What do you mean? I'm like, that stuff, Tribe Called Quest or whatever, there's just certain bands where the drumming or the beats have totally inspired my drumming as a, you know, which I think some people, it's been years since I think it raised an eyebrow. I think it's probably understood that that would make sense now. But you alluded to this too, I think, that some sort of hip-hop influence is in your playing. Do you think that's a bit underrated, the notion that hip-hop music might inspire people to play drums a certain way?
I mean,
That doesn't seem like a... That seems like an idea that most people, I think, would be on board with.
I know the year is 2023, and I may be talking about 1997. I'm sorry, but...
No, I don't know. I mean, I also don't really... I just think of it as like it's language. It's like whatever's around us is what really is going to influence us. And we can pretend like we're going to wear our jazz hat and that's all that ever influenced us, but that's not reality. You know, like, it's language. So if you're listening to those types of beats all the time, even if you don't want to, it's part of what you know in this world. And I think all of it comes out in your music, if you're being honest.
Well, I just mean, like, one of my favorite drummers in a way is like RZA. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Like, those are beats that have influenced the way what I bring to the table sometimes. That's all I'm getting at. You know what I mean? And I think, like, the role of hip hop producers in beat making and drumming, I don't know. I'm babbling and I'm riffing here. I didn't plan to talk about this. Hey, Doug, do you know what I'm kind of talking about too? Like, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay.
And it makes total sense.
Yeah.
You know, well, first of all, the source of some of that drumming, you know, those are like some very groundbreaking, sort of heavy influential drummers. But the way that the producers use the samples sets a different tone, and that is a different inspiration on its own. You know, I think in Tortoise, like, which is like my window into hip hop is mostly the dudes in Tortoise.
Yeah.
What's his face is like the greatest beat maker of all time.
Dilla?
Yeah, Dilla.
Jay Dilla.
Dilla.
Absolutely.
Jay Dilla is like flipped everything, if you ask Parker.
Well,
for sure.
Well, I would agree.
Jay Dilla is like the greatest of all time.
In a weird way, Jay Dilla is one of the greatest drummers of all time. Yeah. Like, that's just the way
I guess that's
it.
What I was trying. Yeah. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
I think so Madlib is one of the greatest drummers. Madlib's one of my favorite drummers for sure.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying is, yes, we are. There's no orthodoxy with this kind of stuff anymore. People listen more open ended. But I just haven't heard too many people talk about such producers and beat makers in the same breath that they might a great drummer. And I'm saying for me, it's been this way for 20 odd years where I'm like, that's what I'm bringing to the table. Like, and I don't have anything more profound to say about it. I feel like you kind of were saying something similar. Is that fair, Charles? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think it's also at this point, it's like, it all goes back and forth. You hear producers that really influence the way drummers play and even the way they think of form and things like that and vice versa. Yeah. And it already was vice versa, but now it's going back that way and coming back this way. Yeah, I think it's cool when it's, in fact, some of my favorite stuff kind of blurs the line. You can't tell sometimes, you know?
Well, and I think that's quite true of Black Duck. I was listening to it with my family, this wonderful record of yours, and one of the dronier pieces came on, and my son is like, what's going on? Are we in a cave? Are we in a forest? I'm afraid. I'm like, just eat your dinner. Everything's fine. Calm down. no, it's having this kind of profound effect on people in my house. I want to go back to what you were saying a little bit too, Charles, about your schooling. I understand you're referring to university, I think, or a conservatory. Roosevelt University, is that what you were referring to there?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right.
And is that where you met Bill McKay?
Yeah, that's where I met Bill too.
Yeah. Profound. Let's just be real, guys. School is cool, right? That's one of the messages we want to send to the young people. School is cool. Does anyone want to back me up on this? I feel like school is cool. That's where I met a lot of my good friends.
School's mostly cool.
It can be. Yeah. That's where I first heard Tortoise, because of school, I feel like. Someone had it. I was like, what is that?
Nice.
Yeah. So anyway, sorry. How did you come to meet Bill there, Charles? Exactly. What was the context at school?
Bill was working at the university, and we had a, he's still one of my good friends, a really close friend of mine, who was good friends with Bill. So we had a mutual friend, and he introduced us, and we started playing together. Bill's one of the first people I played with in Chicago. We have a record we made of Bill's back in 2003.
Oh, there you go.
It's crazy,
okay,
20 years ago.
So you are, so that's like, what are you, in your early 20s when you meet Bill? basically, something like that?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So that's an impressionable age, and you're still friends to this day. That's nice and sweet to hear. Doug, how did you come to? I know that sounded sarcastic. It's just my tone. I'm sorry. I was being sincere. It is nice.
No, it is. It is. It's rare to have people in your life like that. Yeah. I'm thankful.
Well, and you may not know this, Charles, but Bill has also been on this show several mm-hmm. times, and we've become friendly as well. And I'm sad is he on the road as we're speaking or something? Is that right?
He's pretty busy. I'm not sure what he's got happening.
I think he's got a real heavy work schedule this week.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I'm sad he's not here because it's a tradition to have Bill on the show every time he puts out a thing now, it seems, and I miss him, yeah. But it's fine. Doug, how did you come to meet Bill exactly?
Well, Bill was around for a long time before I ever heard him play, and we sort of became friendly acquaintances, mostly by running into each other at shows or like at this bar that some of us hang out at sometimes. We had a lot of mutual friends, and it seemed like he was playing guitar with a lot of people that I knew, but somehow it was eluding me, like seeing him play anything, or, you know, and I was not really aware of what he was doing. You know, like a lot of people, well, at least in my experience, a lot of people that I know that are musicians, I like see their band play, and then eventually they become someone that's like around and that I know. And
yeah,
for Bill, I just didn't see him play for a long time. And he was kind of flitting around playing with lots of different people. And I had no impression at all of what his guitar playing was like or anything, but we would just talk occasionally at this bar.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Doug, I feel like maybe we talked about this before. Chicago is both a giant American city, but it's also in the arts world kind of a small town. Is that a fair way of looking at it?
I feel like it's kind of like that, yeah. There's definitely a neighborhood small town feeling to like the music scene for sure.
Yeah.
A lot of like-minded people sort of that are aware of each other.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So it's the kind of thing you're describing is you might see a guy like Bill around a bunch, but it might take a little bit to finally strike up a conversation kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I dig on that. So now you two are playing, you and Charles, Doug and Charles, sorry. How does Bill join the fold in terms of what you two are up to?
Well, Doug and I hadn't really played any like written, quote unquote, written material, you know, mm-hmm. when we were playing together, we were kind of improvising and just kind of exploring different ideas, maybe if we, but that's about as specific as it got, as maybe like just exploring a vibe or something, but it was really open-ended. And so when we decided to bring Bill in, we talked about it, and of course he just fit right in, you know. It was only then I think that really like we decided to kind of, well, even then we were still playing mostly improvised ideas, I guess. It wasn't until later when we were going to record that we really kind of put some solid songs together.
Hmm.
But we even did some quite a few shows improvised.
So, I mean, we did like probably three years worth of shows without a single composition.
Hmm. Yeah. Was it that long?
Because
3 years? Yeah.
Cause that's what we were approaching the group as, like this improvised thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we were basically trying to develop that mostly by not practicing ever, just kind of like getting gigs and doing them. And it was only when we finally decided, hey, let's record this group. What if each one of us also like wrote a song?
Right.
So,
right. So it's a mix.
That was the end result. Like, let's improvise, but let's have like some compositions just to keep things, I guess, for the diversity on the record, just to have some different things.
Doug, what was the impulse to begin this initially, do this project as an improvisational outlet as opposed to a compositional one? Can you speak to that?
I mean, specifically for me, it's because I'm not a very good improviser and I wanted to get better at it.
Mm.
And I have a very slow working brain. Seems like improvisers have very sharp and fast synapses. And I was trying to find a way to squeak my slow brain into that context.
I see.
And maybe grease the wheels a little bit.
I see. Charles, Doug says he didn't feel like he was a strong improviser at the beginning. Do you feel like he's gotten any better? Can we just do a quick evaluation of Doug's status as an improviser?
Well, I always, of course, felt like Doug was great at what he did and what he brought to the table, or else I wouldn't have been doing it too. You know what I mean? He's great at what he does. He always was. But I think it's true that what we do has found a more specific direction as a group. It's hard to put into words, but like when you play even an improvised context a lot with people, you develop a certain unique kind of way of doing things. And so I think this band kind of, we found some cool different avenues that we can kind of consistently head down.
Yeah. Yeah. So Charles, you're each, I guess, sort of tasked with bringing at least one composition to the party. Do you compose on the drums? Did you bring in, or do you play other instruments? That's kind of where I guess I'm coming from. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, like for a lot of things that I do, like it ends up being kind of a more jazz approach where I'll write chord changes and lead sheet, just kind of standard jazz style. But for this, I don't know. That's not how any of us brought it. I wanted to kind of do something different. So I wrote it on guitar, actually, a little guitar part that I played. And I think on the demo that we kind of tracked over, I played guitar, but I think most of it got replaced. But yeah, I actually wrote this idea on guitar, but it really was kind of just an idea that I had that was like some chords and a groove. And Doug came up with most of the melody on it, really.
And what piece is that?
That's The Trees Are Dancing.
Oh, okay. Cool. So, sorry, when did you start playing guitar?
I mean, I don't really play guitar seriously, but, like, I mean, I've kind of messed around on it forever. I don't, like, perform on guitar, but, you know, sometimes I put an idea, play something on a guitar that you wouldn't think of otherwise, you know.
That's what the drummers do when the drummers pick up the guitars. They make it all up. It's weird.
I would add in this particular context, the thing that Charles brought to the group is composed in the way that you were talking about earlier with like hip hop producers, where his sort of guitar and drum demo that was this kind of looped thing had like a really particular pocket to it. And we actually kept that and used it on the track because it had this feel that the three of us playing without the loop didn't really have the same feel. So, I mean, when Charles mentioned, you know, that maybe I wrote a like the melody for the tune, I think the real composition part of the tune and the way that the song feels is like in his initial demo thing. That relates directly to the like the hip hop producer thing to me.
That's fascinating to me. Charles, I don't know if you've had this discussion. If this is news to you, Doug's take on it, what do you make of that?
No, that's cool. I hadn't thought of it exactly like that, but it's true. And really, in that sense, it was a collaboration with the producer. It was a collaboration with John Hughes, who recorded it and mixed it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And he kind of took this demo that I had and we chopped. I don't remember if it was with Doug and Bill or if it was just me and John, but we kind of chopped and cut and pasted a form, you know, together out of it. And some of it, you know, it didn't sound smooth, but we didn't need it to. It was just kind of a sketch pad to build on. But it did end up having a vibe doing it that way as opposed to just playing through it perfectly or whatever, you know.
Yeah. I just want to say that this interaction reminds me of why I so love interviewing bands. I like the notion that I can ask a question and a band member will say something that the other band member had never heard before. And because I know from my own experience, you don't often talk yourself. You just do stuff. You don't really talk about it too much. So I just want to say thank you. This is just another reminder of, every once in a while, I'm like, why the hell do I do this stuff? And this is why. I like these little moments. That's all. Sorry, guys. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for sharing.
These two are so, you're so welcome. I mean that so sincerely.
Really?
From the bottom of my heart, you're so welcome.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate that too. That's nice. It's nice of you to say. So we've alluded to the instrumentation in this band. Doug, can you speak to why the two guitar drums formation in this case? Not a bass, I guess, is one of the maybe the subtext of what I'm asking. But why two guitar and why two guitars and drums in this formation?
I mean, for me specifically, it was because I wanted to play guitar because that's an instrument that has more possibilities for me in an improvising context.
Yeah,
and it was also because it was during a period of time where I was focusing on guitar and trying to get better on guitar, and that's just how it ended up. And it also makes us think of things in a different way than, you know, like, so initially I was playing with Charles and we were trying to squeak out some ideas, and when we decided to ask Bill to come in, it seemed to set a certain tone for what we're doing, like not having a bass player, and for me and Bill to sort of alternate between maybe trying to fulfill that role a little bit on our guitars or whatever,
Charles, I mean, traditionally a rhythm section is bass and drums. Without the bass, you are the rhythm section ostensibly, with some rhythm guitar as well, I suppose. But is it odd for you to play without a bass player in any way?
You know, sometimes when you're playing without a bass player, you feel like sometimes you can feel like you're having to pull a train or something, you know, but
But
playing with both Doug and Bill, like, even though, like, Doug, I guess being maybe because he's a bass player also, like, his playing just never loses momentum. It's always got a groove to it, and it's always moving. And Bill, same thing. Bill really stays light and moves. And so I never really missed the bass. The only place that I would sometimes then notice that it wasn't there would be like when we're recording, I'd be like, oh wow, the bass drum's the only thing down there in that frequency range. So, you know, maybe I'll play a floor tom here or something. But like, really, that's it. And it would, and it's like always, I think we all maybe approach it the way kind of just whatever the music needs.
Yeah.
And so it's like, the music seems complete, so we don't feel the need. I think probably there was a track or two on the record. I think my song, Doug played a little bass. And maybe there might have been another, but like live, it feels complete.
Yeah. No, I mean, it sounds amazing. Like I say, it is a moody piece that kind of takes me away as I delve into it. So it's not lacking or anything. I'm just curious.
Yeah. No, it is non-traditional. It is non-traditional in that way, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You invoked, I think you invoked John Hughes III earlier, just moments ago.
Mm-hmm.
Doug, I'm going to go to you on this first, Doug. What is the role of a producer on a record like this one, for a band like this one, where there's a bit of improvisation in composition? I think those of us who follow music know that producers can play huge integral roles, or they can hang back and just sort of capture the magic, so to speak. But what kind of role did John Hughes III play in this particular project?
I mean, I think he has really great ears. You know, he's a musician himself, and as well as a recording engineer. And I just think he has good ears for listening what's going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we decided to make this record, we were kind of like thinking about budget and the future and like what we could afford to spend on this record. And we really were thinking, maybe we can just do this, since we're an improvising group, we'll just do this like guerrilla style and just spit it out in 3 days and have it done. Like 2 days playing and 1 day deciding what the record's going to be and mixing it.
Mm-hmm.
And just do it like super garage guerrilla style. And what ended up happening was that John didn't want to do that. And he sort of considerately listened to the record for a period of time at his own expense and kind of like was crucial in defining like what some of the best moments on the record were.
Yeah.
And then sort of teasing them out of whatever and giving them a sonic touch that was kind of his own thing too, which we appreciated immensely because it was so much better than our idea of just like banging it out. It made it way better.
So a really significant role in this case.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
Nice. Charles, did you want to speak to the same kind of question in terms of working with John?
Yeah, I mean, everything Doug said, John's really good at just making people feel comfortable in the studio, and you can just kind of instantly kind of get in the right headspace and get to it.
Yeah.
And I've worked with them a bunch over the years, so I extra felt comfortable, you know, and I knew that he would do a beautiful job with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. That's it. I mean, he knows how to get a drum sound like nobody else, you know?
Yeah, I know. I appreciate that. It sounds great. So I want to ask you, I want to talk about the sound of this record as a whole. There are, what are there, 8 songs? I feel like this is a record of this time and this place in our history in terms of its mood and in terms of what it conjures for me. Charles, if you were in an interview and put on the spot to characterize the feeling of this record, this is a hypothetical, by the way. This might never happen to you. But let's just say you're in a position where someone asks you, like, can you kind of, you know, in an umbrella concept way, kind of capture what the sound or feeling of this record is? What would you say to someone who may hypothetically ask you a question like that?
I would say that it's a record, like, musically, like we were talking about, it's coming from a lot of different places. We all come from slightly different backgrounds, but backgrounds that help overlap.
Yeah.
So it's coming from that, but then when you zoom out and talk about it in a bigger context of like this moment that we're in historically and all of that, yeah, all of that's a part of it too. So there's some like a lot of things maybe that couldn't even maybe shouldn't fit together, but they're just there anyway. They're side by side, and that's what it is because that's where we're at. I think the music has some of that in it for sure. I don't think we were like necessarily aiming at that or something, but like it just inevitably comes into the music.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. Doug, similar question. Do you feel like this is capturing something about the kind of universal vibe that we're all experiencing?
I don't know. I mean, my outlook on things is that everything is a reflection of everything else.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's about as far as I can go towards defining any given creative endeavor. It's just part of what's happening.
Yeah, no, and that's fair. I think I asked a question of this of an instrumental band in particular. You know, these songwriters with their words, they can kind of try to articulate a bunch of feelings and stuff, and you're like, okay, I get it. But with an instrumental band, it's a bit trickier. Like, anyway, it's hard. It's impossible maybe to even answer. Of course it's of this time and place.
But it is a good question. And in some ways there are, I think one specific example is Doug's tune of The Lit Backyards.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. This is another example. You're talking about how you didn't kind of know something until you read an interview about your bandmate. But like Doug, when I didn't realize that title was, I'll let you talk about it, but it was referencing a very specific moment in time. Like when everybody was hanging in their yards, right?
That is true. The Lit Backyards was a reference to early in the pandemic. And that was one of the first songs that I wrote when I was sitting at home for a year and a half by myself writing music. Mm-hmm. And that was a reference to, you know, eventually people were trying to, you know, personalize and convert their living spaces to so they could socialize with and be safe at the same time.
Yeah.
So a lot of people have backyard situations in my neighborhood. And after about 3 or 4 months of the pandemic, I could look out my back window of my house and see every backyard on like on both sides of our alley, up and down the entire block, were all lit up at night. converted into like sort of safe socializing areas. And previously that had not been the case.
I want to say that it's really heartening to hear that explanation of that song, because I think what you're kind of getting at is the surreal optimism that looking at your window maybe gives to you. Like, oh, mm-hmm. people are figuring out a way around this to still gather, but what the hell? Like, it's so weird, and it's both beautiful and bleak on some level, I guess, is where I'm coming from.
That's definitely part of the feeling of that tune, was like hopeful and bleak at the same time.
Well, you know why I asked or why I brought that up, or why I sort of described it as such, is because for me, when I hear it, it sounds a bit like a demented version of that song, When You're Smiling. When you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the phrasing is very similar to me every time it comes on.
Oh, the descending melody. I can see it.
It totally sounds like When You're Smiling. When you're smiling, and then, but it sounds fucked up.
But then it takes a curve.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so then when you're, I picture you looking at your window like, what the fuck? Like, we're good, but we're not. Like, that's kind of like where I, anyway, I'm taking it in a dark place. That's my nature. I'm sorry. But that's what I heard. It just, anyway, I appreciate that explanation and that. This is of a time and place. I guess the other question then for both of you is, what is making this record, now that it's done and people are going to start to process it and you're thinking about it, what does it say to you about Black Duck? What it can be, what it is currently, these sorts of things. Charles, does this teach you anything about the band? Like, this process of making this record, having it done, where you're going to go next?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it's kind of like, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see where these next shows go, because we have material that we use now that's more kind of composed material and improvised material. So it'll be interesting to see kind of the direction it takes.
Yeah. Yeah. Who can predict the future? Exactly. Doug, do you have any take on what I'm asking? Like, does this,
I mean, I think, you know, I think the way forward for Black Duck is, or the thing I'm looking forward to is, we are going to try and do like some little tours and see where that takes us. And the thing that I think will be interesting to me is to see how we develop playing together over some nights in a row, which we haven't really done that much before.
Right.
I think that may push the music forward a little bit.
Right.
Playing some nights in a row.
Speaking of which, are there plans for touring, live shows, as we're speaking?
Well, we have a record release show coming up in Chicago on June 30th, and then we're doing a warm-up gig before that. Or I shouldn't even put it that way, but it's we're playing a gig the night before that. It's not officially the record release show in Milwaukee, but I wouldn't characterize that as a warm-up gig, but it's just... It's just happening the night before the record release show in Chicago. And then we have a string of dates in September, which looks like it's going to be about 6 shows or so.
Yeah.
And I think we're waiting to do that because sometimes it can be a real drag to tour during the summer. So we just pushed it until the fall, and we're going to go out and play some shows out east.
It can be a drag to tour in the summer? Why is that?
Well, for me it can be, mostly because of the weather.
Oh, it's too hot?
Yeah, I can't stand driving around in a car in like 100 degree weather and then trying to pretend that I like standing around in a rock club that's not air conditioned, you know? Or like whatever.
Wait a second, Doug. Last time you were on the show, weren't you talking about moving to Arizona, the driest, hottest place in the world?
Yes, I was.
Sorry. I'm just trying. I don't mean to catch you in a lie. This isn't a gotcha journalism moment. I just, I didn't realize.
I mean, there's a, well, I have a distinction which mostly has to do with humidity.
Ah, right. So the dry heat doesn't bother you as much.
Not until I try to live in it. Which
yeah, exactly. That was a hypothetical at the time. That's not happening, right? You're not doing that.
I don't think we're going to move to Arizona, no. But no. It's okay. still something we in the back of our minds. Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. That conversation is still relatively fresh in my mind. So I apologize for bringing it up. it's okay. Okay. Well, this is great news. I'm happy this band exists and all those sorts of things. I want to start to wrap up by asking you both a couple of housekeeping things, including future plans beyond Black Duck, because we've talked a little bit about what might be next. Also directing people to where they can learn more about Black Duck. I'm going to go to Charles first. Charles, do you have anything else you want to talk about or notify people about in terms of your work or where they can keep tabs on your comings and goings?
No, I think all the Black Duck info is out there. The Thrill Jockey website, you can pre-order the album, all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That's good. What about you personally? You got anything else coming up? My other projects?
I've got another album with my trio with Jim Baker and John Tate that is in the works that hopefully will be coming out next year.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what's next.
Is there like a label home for that at the moment?
Astral Spirits.
Oh, good. Great. Okay. So we can keep tabs on that.
I mean, I would just like to interject here and like put my two cents forward and everyone check out Charles's record Seven Bridges, which came out last year.
Okay. Charles, is that Charles on his own or what is that?
Yeah, it's kind of a good, it kind of is a good listen with the Black Duck album because it's John Hughes recorded and mixed and produced that album as well. Huh. But this is kind of my album as a leader, kind of recording at a not just jazz kind of way, you know, like there's a couple singers on it. Huh. There's a lot of people on it. I think there's like 10 musicians. And so it's a different type of album for me.
Well, I appreciate your modesty in not bringing it up. And we're lucky we have a great cheerleader in Douglas McCombs here to point people.
But it's a really great record. It's like, it should be paid attention to.
Is it on the Bandcamp or something?
It's on my Bandcamp, yeah. It's on my personal Bandcamp.
Don't be alarmed.
But that's on Astral Spirits too, right?
Yeah, it's on Astral Spirits as well. They put out my last few things.
So there's a physical release as well?
LP, yeah. Yeah, LP.
Well, don't
only.
Be alarmed. Don't be alarmed, Charles, if you get an email notification that one Vish Khanna has ordered your record.
Okay.
That's what's going to happen. As soon as we're done, I got a meeting to go to, but after that meeting, God damn it. I'm ordering that record right away because I believe
right,
in everything
man.
Doug says. So thank you. Thank you for plugging that, Doug. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks,
great.
Doug.
Yeah, no problem. Doug, similar question for you, Doug. Beyond this, anything coming up that you want to share with us at this point?
I mean, I have a pretty busy summer in Chicago with like some of the usual suspects. I'm doing like solo gig and 11th Dream Day has a gig and Brokeback.
Mm-hmm.
Brokeback has a hilarious gig. Brokeback has been working on some new music, but we also were offered this show opening for Cheap Trick.
Oh, wow.
Which is going to be hilarious.
That's great.
Being completely ignored for half an hour. It'll be very, very exciting.
Are the Cheap Trick people fans of Brokeback?
Well, they signed off on it. I think the us doing the show was maybe the idea of the promoter, who's like sort of a cheerleader of Brokeback. But also, Rick Nielsen's son is drumming now in Cheap Trick.
Oh.
And he's younger.
Oh, I
he's
see.
He's like younger. He's younger than me. I think he's aware and hip to stuff that's happening in Chicago. So,
oh, cool.
He might have had something to do with that too. I don't know, but
well, that's great.
Yeah, you know, there's that. And what did I mention anything else? Oh, I mentioned 11th Dream Day's playing a show. The Black Duck record release shows June 30th.
Yeah.
And then at the end of July, I am doing something that I'm really excited about, which might be slightly under the radar, but like a really, really close friend of mine made an album over the pandemic that is finally being released. And he lives in LA, and he's put together a band in LA to do a record release show and a band in Chicago to do a record release show. So I'm playing that.
Oh.
And I'm excited about that. His release is under the name Coffin Prick.
That sounds familiar to me.
It's this really, really, really incredible, weird, awesome album that is completely played by him alone sitting in his apartment during the pandemic, which to me was like inspiring and also, I don't know, kind of made me a little queasy, but it's like, I don't know. I would like to plug his album if I can, because it's incredible.
Would we know Coffin Prick under any other name?
Well, he had a band. He had a band when he still lived in Chicago that was more of like a punk band called Coffin Pricks.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's why it maybe sounds familiar. Yeah.
And he has retained that name because the Coffin Pricks punk band was sort of his baby. And he now made this album under the name Coffin Prick. And it's just him. And it's this incredibly weird and deep, awesome music played by one person sitting alone in his apartment.
Okay. All right.
Well, I don't know why I keep mentioning that aspect of it, but that's part of it to me, is that like, it's really great.
It's always magical when people are that self-propelled, I guess. The fact that he did everything himself.
Yeah.
That's cool. No, that sounds great. That 11-3, and I'll keep an eye out for that. I'm not making any Bandcamp promises yet on that one because it's not out yet, but I'll keep an eye on that. I'll try and check that out for sure, and I hope other people do as well. You alluded to 11th Dream Day. Are you playing a festival with Superchunk? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, there's a thing in Chicago called, what's it called?
I don't.
Squared?
Yeah.
Four Squared or
something like that. Yeah.
Charles, do you know what it's called? Squared.
Square Roots.
Square Roots. That's it. It's this festival that happens every year in the Lincoln Square neighborhood, and it's sort of subsidized or booked or partially promoted by the Old Town School of Folk Music.
Oh, cool.
I'm correct about that, right, Charles?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So
yeah, it used to be their huge festival. It had a different name back in the day, but then they scaled it down to this, which it's not scaled down. It's just, well, I guess you know what I'm talking about, Doug, the old one.
I mean, it used to be in a big park or something, right?
And yeah, it used to be in that huge park.
Now it's more like a street fair.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. It's like the street fair.
Couple stages.
I see.
But yeah, there's some interesting stuff on that. There's like X, which is one of my favorite bands of all time, for sure.
Yep.
And Superchunk will be playing. That will be cool. And
I wonder who their new... Have they announced who their new drummer is? Do we know?
Yeah, they have... I've seen like Instagram posts. I don't know her name, but they have a new drummer who's been...
Awesome.
Either filling in or replacing Worcester.
Well, John left the band, as I understand it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know her name.
Oh, okay. Cool.
But seems like it'll be cool. I don't know.
It'll be great.
And then there's an African band whose name escapes me that I'm really kind of interested in seeing. I don't know if I'm going to be able to see all this stuff.
Because, yeah.
You know, who knows? There's different stages and different playing times and stuff like that, but.
Well, that's good. You got a full summer, it sounds like.
Yeah, 11th Dream Day is just coming off of like a sort of a career milestone where we played. This year is the 40th anniversary of the beginning of 11th Dream Day. And
oh, wow, yeah.
It's also the 40th anniversary of this venue in Chicago called the Metro.
Mm-hmm.
and we played 11th Dream Day played one of their Metro's like 40th anniversary shows just like a month ago.
Nice.
And we did this career retrospective, super long, deep set list, and it was like really a blast. It was great.
Oh, nice. That's great. I love that band as well. So that's lovely to hear. That's great. Cool. Well, that's great. Thanks for those updates. Oh, sorry. Any Tortoise stuff? Every time I talk to someone from Tortoise, you're working on a record. You're still working on the record. Any news on that front?
Yep, we're still working on the record.
Okay, cool.
We have some tour dates coming up in November.
Okay.
And hopefully we'll be able to squeeze in another session on the record before those dates. It would be nice to continue the momentum.
Nice.
Because it's been pretty, our recording sessions have been pretty productive, and we make some pretty big steps forward each time we get together, but it's hard to get our schedules together. So
yeah. Well, no, I appreciate that. And, you know, we'll just be patient. Lord knows you'll probably be on the show in another 6 months to tell me more about it. So that'll be great. I appreciate these updates when I can get them. So, well, I want to thank you both for this, sharing all of this information and spending some time with me. I want to go out on a song from this Black Duck record. And I'm going to ask if we can figure out a way by consensus to go out on such a song. Charles, I'm going to go to you to make the choice. And if Doug agrees, then we're good. If Doug disagrees, we got a little problem. We got a little problem. We got to figure that out. I don't know how we're going to figure this out. Charles, you can defer to Doug if you like, if it makes you uncomfortable. But no, go ahead. What would you like to go out on?
Let's do Bill's tune since Bill's not here. Let's do Delivery.
Delivery. And is there anything you want to tell us about that?
I don't know the story behind this one. This is for Bill. For the next time we're on, he'll talk about it.
Doug, do you have any
blanks for yourself?
I appreciate that. Thank you, Charles. Doug, do you have any insights about Delivery or any memories of laying it down?
No, I do not. I think of it as a very Bill kind of thing. Like, I mean, it's kind of like this kind of choogly riff that sometimes Bill will pull out of his hat.
Yeah.
Like, and sort of every once in a while I get these reminders that Bill is like sort of a Keith Richards choogle riff kind of lover. And with maybe a little bit of like Jimmy Page thrown in. And I guess that's what it makes me think of. Because like a lot of people think of him as like finger style guy or whatever, or like, you know, arpeggiated like finger pick guitar guy. And he's got a lot of facets.
He contains multitudes, Bill, and he's a lovely spirit and a lovely guy. So I appreciate both of you choosing a song of his to go out on. So let's do it. This is from the self-titled and wonderful new album by this great new band, Black Duck. This is Delivery. Charles, Douglas, thank you so much for spending this much time with me. I hope you enjoyed at least some aspect of this, and I wish you the best luck in the future, and I hope we talk again soon.
Thanks, Vish.
Thanks for having us. We'll be right back.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Douglas and Charles from Black Duck. I hope you enjoyed that, and you got to hear a little song there too, a little sample of the music. I hope you enjoyed that, and we'll check out their full-length album. And otherwise, thank you for listening to this, the 786th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available just about wherever you get your podcasts. Sometimes it even sneaks back onto platforms that I had taken it off of. I've just discovered this, and I gotta deal with that company now. And anyway, I digress. Just weird stuff happens sometimes. Anyway, if you can't find an episode of the show that you've heard about and you're looking for it, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. You can also like Creative Control on Facebook or follow the show on Twitter at the moment at vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at vishkana. And if you missed it last time, I'm still looking for invites to that Blue Sky thing. I don't know if it's better or what, but if you've got an extra invite, please send me a note and I'll try it out. That would be nice. Thank you. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain all the work that goes into this podcast. $6 American or more a month grants you access to some exclusive content. You get the episodes a little bit earlier than everybody else. And also, if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt in either the maroon or yellow designs, there are still some left. Just message me on Patreon once you've made your donation, and I'll get you one while supplies last. Thank you very much. Speaking of thanks to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, all fine businesses, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, a delicious business. So good, they run out of donuts and people are getting mad at them. I read that on the Facebook. People are getting abusive because they run out of donuts because the donuts are so good. Come on, man. Don't get upset about a donut. Just chill out. Or call ahead. Do what I do. I call ahead and I say what I want. When I lived in Ontario, that's what I did. I'm whispering into a microphone, which amplifies the whispering. So it's just me talking quiet all of a sudden. But I'm not really whispering. Anyway, Granddad's Donuts is great. Don't make trouble for them. And they all of those places I just mentioned provide in-kind support for the show, so I thank them profusely. I also thank my dear friend Jim Guthrie, one of the people I first fell in love with Tortoise with. He lends me music for this show, and you can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode covering the exploits of Black Duck. I hope you will check out their album in its entirety. It's out now on Thrill Jockey. And I hope you'll subscribe to this podcast or follow it and tell all your friends about it. Spread the word about how much you like Creative Control. That means a lot. Otherwise, I gotta go. My kids want me to play a video game with them, and I'm not good at it, but I'm gonna give it my all. I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.